Thank you, Kate, because this is an informal talk, and I'm not exactly sure where we're going, what we're going to cover in the time available, because I want to leave some time for discussion. It's interesting because Kate referred to Dharma sisters, Dharma brothers, and that's at the core of what I want to talk about, because I'm here because I could not think of not being here this weekend any more than I could have thought of not being in Bellingham last weekend, because I feel right now with a couple of people who I've met in the past at Samish. I've been going to the Samish Sesshin since 2006. that I've come to visit a part of my family who I haven't met before. And that's a quality that everyday Zen offers us. It's a quality that Zen practice in the West offers us. And it's at the core of something that I really hold dear. It makes me very happy and warm-hearted to think about how we're building something together, how we're developing something together. I have a couple of things that I want to read to you that I pulled together from some of my favorite sources. And to start also to say is I discovered Green Gulch Farm of San Francisco Zen Center in 1984, because I was going to a meeting that was being held there. It wasn't a Zen meeting, it was a Women in Design meeting. And I looked around and I said, well, this is interesting. And I started showing up for things in the late 80s. And then I met Norman in the early, mid 90s. And when we would talk in a group, for instance, the company time retreats, which started in the summer of 1996, people would go around and state what their practice is. And you'd get to me and I'd sit there and go, you know, people were saying, my practice is I count my breaths. My practice is no thinking. My practice is following my breath. Variations. And you'd get to me and my comment was invariably, my practice is the way I live my life in the world. And it remains so. And I've seen how that has happened, and I've seen how the practice has kind of, there's a reference I'll give you a citation from, soaked in, kind of in an uncanny, sneaky way. I'm going to take just a sidestep for a moment and mention that we are family in the context of everyday Zen that Norman established when he stepped down as abbot of San Francisco Zen Center in January, February of 2000, and then he established Everyday Zen. And Everyday Zen, the name, comes from a koan that you may be familiar with already, from the Mumin Khan of everyday mind, or ordinary mind, is the way. And the case is used in the Bay Area Shuso ceremonies for the start of the questions. And the dialogue is thus. Zhao Zhu asked Nan Quan, you don't correct me, I'm sure I'm pronouncing things not quite right. Zhao Zhu asked Nan Quan, what is the way? And Nan Quan replied, everyday mind is the way. Zhao Zhu said, how should I direct myself toward it? Nan Quan replied, if you direct yourself toward it, you will be going in the wrong direction. Zhao Zhu said, but if I don't direct myself toward it, how can I know it? And Nan Quan replied, the way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is an exaggeration. Not knowing is stupidity. When you enter the way, you see it as vast and boundless as space. What does that have to do with yes and no thinking? Zhao Zhou suddenly realized Nan Quan's meaning for himself. And Norman has gone on to say that everyday Zen, everyday mind is the essence of the Zen approach to Buddhism. And the meaning, as I've mentioned, for me in this is that just this, practicing and living my life in the world, is how I practice and what I offer. The sneaky part is a citation from Suzuki Roshi, the founder of San Francisco Zen Center, and our grandfather, great-grandfather in this lineage. So we're all brothers and sisters in the Dharma. I feel like in part I'm cousins or aunties to some of you in the Dharma. And it feels lovely to have the opportunity to meet the branches of the family. So in December 1965, this is from two final paragraphs in a recording that was transcribed and you can find online. And Suzuki Roshi is talking about progress in your practice. We don't know how much progress we made, actually, but if you practice it, you will realize that it is not possible to make rapid, extraordinary progress. The progress you make is always little by little. It is like to walk through a fog. You don't know when you get wet, but if you just walk through fog, you will be wet, little by little, even if you don't know it is not like a shower. When you go out, when it is showering, you will feel, oh, that's terrible. It is not so bad when you get wet by fog. It is very difficult to dry yourself. This is how we make progress. There is not a need to worry about your progress. Just do it this way. You cannot do it all of a sudden. This is how we practice, especially Soto way, is to do it little by little. Just to do it is our way. The point is to do it with sincerity in each moment. That is the point. There should not be nirvana besides our practice. So practice and realization is what we offer, is what we do, is happening every day. It's not something that comes out of something that is except from something that we're already doing. So we sit to ground ourselves, to share the experience with others. We get up. Practice doesn't end when we get up. Practice doesn't end when we walk out of the zendo. Practice sits inside of us. And this is what we have to offer the world, in how this soaks into us, how the changes happen slowly, sneaky, very sneaky, till the day somebody will say something perhaps and you realize that the way you perceive yourself may be different than the way you're experiencing things, that the way different than the way other people are experiencing you, because the mist of practice, this slow moment-by-moment change over time, has come through you, and you're soaked through with it. It is infusing yourself, it is infusing your lives, and it's a really good thing. Another favorite quote for me is a conversation between the Buddha and his attendant, Ananda, who was also his cousin, so to speak. So on an occasion, Ananda came to the Buddha and said he thought that half the spiritual life revolves around spiritual friendship. The Buddha immediately corrected him and said, "Do not say this, Ananda. Spiritual friendship is not half of the spiritual life. It is the entire spiritual life." That what we share here, what we share in our own local communities, what we share amongst each other as a larger family, this is what we share in our lives, the friendship. Offering friendship, support, I was talking with some folks at Tazahara last month and encouraging people as they were approaching the summer guest season where, as I've described it, there are two parallel universes happening at Tazahara in the summer. There's the student universe and there's the guest universe, and they interact and they intersect at times with having the whole place function. But part of what you do in spiritual friendship is you also show up for each other. You show up, you keep the schedule. If you're showing up for others, other people are showing up for you and supporting each other and encouraging each other. So spiritual friendship, being part of a family, letting the practice soak in, feeling where it's going, feeling how you're moving ahead, where you may not even know it until you find yourself there, and asking questions. So this weekend is part of a culmination of what's been developing and happening with this network of spiritual friendships and recognizing people as teachers and recognizing how our family is growing and changing and things are shifting. And I'm delighted and honored to be part of the experience where Kate and Michael will be recognized as the guiding teachers of Mountain Rain, as Tim was recognized last week in Bellingham for Red Cedar. It's wonderful to see how the changes have happened in not a very long period of time. Zen Center only experienced its 50th anniversary a handful or so years ago, and Tazahara is just experiencing its 50th birthday this summer. That's not a long time, especially in a tradition that's been around for 2,500 years. So I think it's a great occasion for happiness and for sharing love and sharing companionship. I also feel that there are always opportunities. I was looking at the poster just outside this door about how we take care of the world and the different citations from spiritual traditions from all over the world. And I often mention that I feel like I hold two spiritual passports because I was raised in a humanistic Judaism in my own family. And then I've got the Buddhism of Zen practice that we have and that we share. And it's one of the reasons for me that Norman has been my teacher, because he shares a similar dual passport. But the other is that in unexpected places, you can find other references that just touch you, that say, here's where we connect. Here's where things have happened and developed in different ways and from other sources. And you, there's this moment of recognition and reinforcement and delight. I went to the Vancouver Art Gallery today. And I saw a wonderful exhibit of work by Susan Point. So this is my separate recommendation. If you haven't been there, go to the show. It's wonderful. Her work is wonderful. So I found these two items. There was a mention of the Coast Salish design vocabulary, which said, in philosophy of the circle, they were breaking down some of the elements in her artwork. In philosophy of the circle, it is important to consider how your actions affect yourself, your people, and generations to come, which is so resonant with what we practice. And to think that First Peoples, Native Peoples, beliefs that we have and carry forward, to look out for seventh generation, to look out for each other, to help build a tradition and support each other going forward without separation. We talk a lot in our practice about no separation. And this to me also relates to that. And to a phrase, I have an old Tazahara zip sweatshirt. And on the side, I believe it's Reb Anderson's calligraphy that translates as deep faith in cause and effect. And we think about what we do and how what we do makes a difference in what happens afterwards. You can get into all the conversations about karma and turning into foxes behind the mountain and what your answer is and what your questions are, it comes back to saying we're responsible for what we say, what we think, what we do, and how that impacts others now and going forward, because partly what we're living in now are the impacts of what people have said and done and thought before that we inherit. So we try to inherit and develop and put something forward that is at least as good as, if not an improvement. So I like this. The other was a wall of pieces that she had, small works, that I think they were photo prints. They weren't carvings or some of her more physical type work. And one of them caught my attention because it simply said, "Nothing missing." And that had also reminded me of one of my favorite sources of practice, which is Dogen's Instructions to the Zen Cook. And there's a place in that where Dogen relates conversations with the Tenzo of Awang. I'm not very good at some of these pronunciations. While he was traveling in China. And they met on a ship, and later they met and had an exchange when Dogen visited, and when they visited together at Mount Tiangtong, where Dogen asked the Tenzo, "What is practice?" And the Tenzo replies, "There is nothing in the world that is hidden." So, closing here is also a quote that I love from Jane Hirschfield, which has sometimes been cited as the you know, what is the essence of Zen, or the seven words quote, which is, "Everything changes, everything is connected, pay attention." And then in one version that I read, when she said this in the course of an interview she had, I think it was with the Wall Street Journal. And she said, and actually, just the last two words could do it too, pay attention. And if we pay attention, if we wake up from our sitting to what we do every day, and we think about what we're doing, and we're careful with how we do it, and we pass things along so that they are as good or better, that makes all the difference. There was also, and I'm not sure if it's the calligraphy that's still there on the altar at the Tazahara kitchen. There was a calligraphy that was one there, and I think it may be the same now, that translates something to the effect, as close as I can recall it, of careful attention to detail is the family way. And then if we take care of each other, we pay attention, we do things carefully, this is how we, again, reinforce what we're doing as a family, what we're doing as a community, what we're doing individually to help support each other and to help go forward and make things better. The concept of everything is perfect the way it is gave me a really hard time for quite a while, until the only way I could then it made sense for me was I thought about the Rubik's Cube, which you can move around in all kinds of ways, but has one way that it solves itself. And you can't, it's not controvertible. It just kind of, that's the way it fits. And while we may be in a world that we don't like all of the features of, the things that go on, what goes on between people, what's said, what's done, it's the world as it is at this moment. That's the way all the pieces are fitting together. And since that's where we are at this moment, we can't alter this moment. However, there's the room for improvement that if we do something a little bit different and try to make the changes where we feel that they're needed, the next moment or the moment after that, that will fall together in hopefully a way that may alleviate some of the difficulties and pain and suffering that we have now. So that's how I could kind of had it settle and have some meaning that I could live with. So it's showing up, sharing, supporting, being kind. I had one thing else. That also in the Tenzo Kyokun, Dogen talks about the joyful mind, kind mind, and big mind. And I encourage, if you haven't read it, especially like Uchiyama Roshi's commentary on it. It's beautiful and it's inspiring. I've added something else. When I Wish You So in 2013, I put this out there, which is in addition to that, I came up with something I called refrigerator mind. And it applies to anything, and as do most of the principles. You can read Tenzo Kyokin, and it's all about tenzos and kitchens and things. It's applicable, needless to say, to anything. So you can substitute out tenzo or kitchen and such and find ways. It's just, it's very juicy and wonderful and inspiring. So refrigerator mind is this. You go to the refrigerator or the cupboard or your office and you look at the resources that are there. You've got whatever products, you've got whatever budget, you've got whatever skills, you've got whatever timeline. That's what you have to work with. So you do the best you can. There's a recipe in Zen Kitchen, which is, it took me a moment to realize what it was talking about. You know, we have these great big refrigerators. They're like the size of a container. Some of them may be formerly containers. And they're called the walk-in. So they're bigger than a refrigerator. So there's a recipe for something called walk-in minestrone. And at first when I saw that recipe, I couldn't figure out why did it have this name. And then I realized it's a version of refrigerator mind. It's what you have, it's what's there. Oh, we got leftover potatoes and leftover beans and a few vegetables that need to be rescued before they have to be put in the compost. You make something of it, or it's another version of stone soup, where everybody brings something to the table. So refrigerator mind, you can apply at your office. You've got a budget, you've got a personnel, there are limitations, you're not satisfied, something's missing, but you still have a project to complete, you've got a due date, you've got to deliver, and you make the best you can. And sometimes you can trade off, and sometimes you can negotiate and get something additional if you need. It still comes down to this is what's available. This is what we can pull together right now so that things can be as perfect as they can at the moment, and then the improvement can come going forward, and you hope for the best. A great believer in hoping for the best. One of my favorite categories is the every little bit helps category. If you do something, it's better than doing nothing. So take a step, do something, help move things forward. I think I'm going to stop there. And we'll have a little conversation, okay? Yeah. Do we have a bell?
So press that little
button. Oh, press the little button. Stop.